the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the Gospel of Luke. Here's Pastor Sandy in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 22.
Peter's in for a letdown. Peter will prove chicken before the rooster crows. I'll never forget, Kathy and I, we were walking on top of Jerusalem's walls on one of our trips, and we were overlooking the Kidron Valley when we heard off in the distance a rooster crow. And it was an eerie reminder of Peter's failure right there in Jerusalem. And he said to them, "When I sent you without money bag, knapsack, and sandals, did you lack anything?" You know, remember when he sent them out two by two? And so they said, "Nothing." Well, then he said to them, "But now, he who has a money bag, let him take it, and likewise a knapsack. And he who has no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one." Hey, some tough sledding is ahead. Jesus is trying to prepare his men. The environment was once charitable, Jesus is saying. It's about to turn hostile. You see, there's a time for God's miraculous provision, but there's also a time for self-preservation, and that time is now. Jesus entered the city Sunday on the back of a donkey. They rolled out the red carpet. But now on Thursday, he'll leave the city with a cross on his back. Likewise, the disciples had enjoyed a warm reception, but the tide will turn on them soon as well. So he tells them, "Sell your sack, buy a sword." It was a figurative way of saying, "Buck up, get ready, buckle your seatbelt, you're in for a rough ride ahead." Verse 37, "For I say to you that that which is written must still be accomplished in me, and he was numbered with the transgressors." Jesus is going to be arrested. It was predicted of him. He quotes here Isaiah 53, verse 12, how he was numbered among the criminals or the transgressors. It was a prophetic picture of Jesus' arrest and sufferings on the cross. Jesus says, "For the things concerning me have an end. I was destined for a purpose, and that was to bear a cross." And so they said, "Lord, look, here are two swords." And he said to them, "It is enough." They just misunderstood. He's done talking with them. They just don't understand. Jesus was speaking figuratively. Yet the disciples thought that he was telling them to stockpile an arsenal. You know, go out and buy your sword. "We're going to buy up a bunch of swords, Lord. We'll be ready to fight." Could it be that this was what Peter was thinking later when he pulled out the sword in order to attack the servant of the high priest? You know, from the beginning of the ministry, Jesus taught that his kingdom wouldn't be established by force, that God's kingdom advances not by slaying men, but by swaying men. Islam advances by the sword, but not Christianity. Christianity doesn't slay men, it sways men and saves men. The sword we fight with is the sword of the Spirit, which is God's Word. Well, verse 39, "Coming out, he went to the Mount of Olives as he was accustomed, and his disciples also followed him." The other Gospels further identify the place as the Garden of Gethsemane, or Gethsemane means oil press. Even today, you can visit this garden, and you can see the 2,000-year-old olive trees. You know, it's mind-boggling to think that Jesus may have prayed under one of these trees. "When he came to the place, he said to them, 'Pray that you may not enter into temptation.' And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's throw. And he knelt down and prayed, saying, 'Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done.'" Now, some Bible interpreters believe that Jesus was trying to avoid the cross when he prayed, "Not my will, but yours be done." I don't believe that for an instant. I believe Jesus was born to die. In fact, throughout his ministry, he embraced his plight. He talked about it with his disciples. He recognized it as his destiny. But talking about it and enduring it are two different things. I think the rejection that he had experienced from the very men he was dying to save, the rejection that he would experience the next day from his own father. I think these things grieved his very soul. The cup he wanted to remove was not the cross. I believe it was the feelings of these rejections from Judas, from Peter, from his disciples, from the Father in heaven. And I believe God removed that cup of rejection. I believe he replaced it with his peace. And the next day, when you see Jesus going to the cross, you don't see a strained, agonizing man. You see a man in perfect peace as he goes to the cross to bear the sin of the world. You know, it's interesting. In Genesis chapter 3, we're told that sin and the rule of Satan began in a garden called Eden. In Revelation 22, at the end of the book, we discover that when Jesus returns and puts an end to sin and Satan's revolt, he will remake the earth into another garden. The story of mankind begins and ends in a garden. But that's not all, for sandwiched in between is another garden called Gethsemane. In this garden, the course of all human history turned. Here, the battle was fought that wrestled the world from Satan and delivered it over to God. Gethsemane was the garden of decision. Through prayer that night, Jesus overcame his pain and his fears and his hurt and his feelings of rejection, and he readied himself for the cross the next day. God took away his cup of pain, this cup of rejection, and he filled it with perfect peace. I believe the spiritual battle that delivers us from darkness into light was not one on the cross necessarily, as it was the night before in Gethsemane. What happened the next day had already been decided in the garden. Verse 43, then an angel appeared to him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. Then his sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground. Remember, Luke was a doctor. He was a physician. And in his gospel, Dr. Luke highlights the humanity of Jesus. Here he details the agony that he endured. He says his sweat resembled great drops of blood. There are two possibilities. First, notice Luke uses the word like. Jesus wasn't literally sweating blood, but his perspiration had the thickness and consistency of human blood. And that's one possibility. Of course, there's another possibility. There is a malady known as hemotridrosis, where intense emotional stress causes the tiny blood vessels in the sweat glands to rupture and expel a mixture of blood and sweat, where he literally would have sweated blood. This also could have been what happened. We don't know for sure. It is interesting, though, that because of Adam's sin in the Garden of Eden, all mankind was sentenced to work by the sweat of his brow. Well, in the work of his redemption, Jesus paid for sin's sweat with the sweat that came from his own brow. Whatever it was that excreted from his pores, Jesus had been stretched to his limits. No one had ever experienced the stress and strain that he endured. And when Jesus rose up from prayer and had come to his disciples, he found them sleeping from sorrow. Jesus is saving the world, and his disciples are sawing logs. And then he said to them, "Why do you sleep? Rise and pray, lest you enter into temptation." They should have been praying with him. Why? Because Jesus is not the only person who's about to face some severe challenges. The disciples should have prepared themselves. And while he was speaking, behold, a multitude. And he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" It's been said a kiss is a contraction of the lips due to an enlargement of the heart. That's not always the case, for you can feign a kiss. And here's an example. But it raises the question, why was Jesus betrayed by a kiss? Surely the temple posse would have recognized him without Judas. You see, I believe the kiss was Satan's attempt to pour more pain into his cup. Imagine betrayed by your closest disciple with a kiss, a show of loyalty, no less. Satan was pouring salt in the wound. He was trying to discourage Jesus, trying to get him to abort his mission. Why die for these guys? Well, when those around him saw what was going to happen, they said to him, "Lord, shall we strike with the sword?" And one of them, he didn't even ask. He struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. One of the sword-swinging disciples, he tried to split the guy's head in two. He wanted to give his hair a permanent part. And so he went right for his scalp and he missed and he ended up just lopping off his right ear. John 18, verse 10 identifies the victim as a man named Malchus and the slasher as a disciple named Peter. Verse 51, but Jesus answered and said, "Permit even this." And he touched his ear and healed him. Notice Jesus' last miracle was to heal a wound inflicted by one of his followers. Oh my. And sadly, that is a miracle that he has had to perform too many times since. Remember, we've not been called to slay, but to sway. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, captains of the temple, and the elders who had come to him, "Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not try to seize me. But this is your hour in the power of darkness." Having arrested him, they led him and brought him into the high priest's house. Caiaphas's house. I've actually been to Caiaphas's house. I've gone down into the dungeon under his house and stood in the very place where Jesus was most likely shackled. Here at Caiaphas's house, his trial has finally begun. But Peter followed at a distance. And I want you to see, you're always in trouble when you follow Jesus at a distance. Don't let any distance get between you and Jesus. Peter let a little distance get between him because he didn't want to appear too close to Jesus. You see, he's already compromising his allegiance. He's already shying away from loyalty. And when you follow at a distance, disaster is on the horizon. For when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, "This man was also with him." But he denied him, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." Oh, Peter. Big, bad, braggadocious Peter denies Jesus in front of a campfire girl. Notice the all-too-common progression. First, Peter follows Jesus at a distance. And then, what do we see? We see him warming himself by the enemy's fire. He's consorting with and he's taking comfort with the wrong crowd. How many times have you seen this happen? Person starts out following at a distance and then all of a sudden he starts warming himself with the enemy's pleasures and with the wrong friendships. Finally, he ends up denying the Lord. You know, the key is not to make the first mistake. Follow hard after Jesus. Don't let there be any distance between you and him. Bask in his love. Experience his power. So when Jesus warms your heart, you're not tempted by the warmth of this world. Well, after a little while, another saw him and said, "You also are of them." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." Then after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, "Surely this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean." Apparently, people from Galilee spoke with a distinctive accent, gave Peter away. But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you're saying." And then immediately, while he was speaking, a rooster crowed. It wasn't yet daybreak, but the rooster had signaled Peter's darkness. But I wonder, think about this. I wonder if Jesus wasn't trying to communicate grace with the rooster's call. A rooster is the harbinger of the morning. Was this a message to Peter that a new day was in store for Peter? That the sun would rise again? Is Jesus telling him, Peter, I'm not done with you yet? It's a rooster who crows, and a rooster signals the new day. And yet I'm sure at this point, Peter couldn't even comprehend a new day. The sound of the rooster marked a crushing defeat. The only thing worse for Peter is what happens next, verse 61. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. What a moment that must have been. Maybe Peter's outside the court. Maybe Jesus is inside the court. Maybe he's being hauled from one holding place to another, or he's being pushed around by the soldiers. Peter just kind of looks through a crack in the door. He catches Jesus' eye. Jesus looks at him. Peter knows. Jesus knows. What was said in that one look? Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. You know, it could have been the end of Peter. His guilt, his feelings of failure were so heavy, it could have crushed him. But Jesus had prayed for him. Peter failed, but his faith did not. He would return to strengthen his brothers because Jesus prayed for him. And remember, Jesus is praying for you. Verse 63. Now the men who held Jesus mocked him and beat him. And having blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, prophesy, who is the one who struck you? It was common for Roman soldiers to play games that victimized their prisoners, especially those that were sentenced for execution. At the place where Jesus was tried before Pilate, when you go there in Jerusalem to the Lithostrata, you find engraved in the stone pavement a design. It's known as the king's game. And this beating may have actually been part of a game played with Jesus. Some people called it the hot hand. Every soldier in the circle except one would ball up his fist and he would cold cock Jesus. His eyes were covered so he couldn't prepare for the blows. He didn't know where they were coming from or when they would be delivered. And then after everyone had participated, they ripped the blindfold off of him and made him try to pick out his attacker, the one who hadn't hit him from the crowd. The game was repeated over and over and over. It was gross brutality is what it was. Author Philip Yancey, he tells of an incident that occurred in the days prior to World War II. Nazi stormtroopers, they arrested an elderly Jewish rabbi and they drug him to the police station. In the corner of the room, several Nazis were beating another Jew to death. And these two soldiers decided to have some fun with the rabbi. They stripped him naked. And they told him to preach the sermon he had prepared for the next Sabbath service. He asked for his yarmulke. And with a shaky voice, a trembling voice, he began to explain how to walk humbly with God. As he spoke, the soldiers jabbed at him and poked at him and prodded him. And Yancey concluded, he said, when I read the gospel accounts of the imprisonment, torture, and execution of Jesus, I think of that naked rabbi standing humiliated in a police station. You know, it's hard for us to underestimate the shame and the indignities that the Son of God suffered to atone for our sin and to produce our healing. The things that he endured are despicable. Verse 65 is an example. And many other things they blasphemously spoke against him. There were indignities apparently that Luke couldn't even write. He couldn't even bring himself to mention. Remember, he wrote this during the 2 years that Paul was in Caesarea, and he was able to go out and do his research, and he interviewed people, and he conducted all kinds of research to discover what actually happened. There were so many things that happened, blasphemous things that happened, that Luke said he just couldn't bring himself to write them down. Isaiah 50, verse 6, gives us a detail of the torture of Jesus that even the gospel records don't record. There we're told, I gave my back to those who struck me and my cheeks to those who plucked out the beard. I did not hide my face from shame and spitting. Here's where no movie I've ever seen, no picture I've ever seen gets it right. Apparently, the bloodthirsty soldiers, they literally ripped Jesus' beard out of his facial follicles. Imagine this. Imagine the face of Jesus. It's puffy, it's swollen, it's bloody, it's bruised. Jesus looks like a heavyweight boxer who's just gone 15 rounds in a bloody brawl. In fact, when Isaiah 53 describes the sufferings of the Messiah, it says, his visage was marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. The literal Hebrew reads, his appearance was not human, and his form not like that of the children of men. Isaiah is telling us that the face of Jesus was so badly beaten that he no longer resembled a human being. His face was just a bloody pulp. Jesus looked as if he'd been in a terrible automobile accident or maybe in an airplane crash. If there had been a funeral, it would have been closed casket. Verse 66, as soon as it was day, the elders of the people, both chief priests and scribes, they came together and they led him into their council. As soon as it was day. You know, it was against the laws of Judaism to condemn a man to death at night. And so they had to wait to daybreak to convene the Sanhedrin and to make it official. The Sanhedrin was made up of the priest and 70 Jewish dignitaries. It was their supreme court. Well, they assembled saying, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will by no means believe. And if I also ask you, you will by no means answer me or let me go. Jesus knew this was a kangaroo court. This trial was rigged. They were after blood, not the truth. Despite their unfair treatment, Jesus answers their question. If you are the Christ, tell us. He does in verse 69. He says, hereafter, the Son of Man will sit on the right hand of the power of God. Now here Jesus quotes two scriptures, and they both refer to the Messiah. They both draw on messianic images from Daniel 7, verse 13, and from Psalm 110, verse 1. In essence, what Jesus is doing, he's warning these Jews to be careful how they judge him, because one day he's going to return and he's going to judge them. Then they all said, are you then the Son of God? And remember, in the Jewish mindset, the son of a bird is a bird. The son of a man is man. So the Son of God is God. And so to say you were the Son of God is to claim deity. And so they ask him, are you then the Son of God? And so he said to them, you rightly say that I am. How much clearer can you get? And he even uses the expression, I am, which was the name God gave to Moses from the burning bush. I am that I am. Jesus was claiming to be Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of the Hebrews. And they said, what further testimony do we need? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth. Now, often liberal critics and cults will say that Jesus never claimed to be God. That is absurd. For that is the very reason he was crucified. Because he did claim to be God. Jesus was God. He claimed to be God. And because the Jews didn't want to bow down to him, that's why they killed him.
Listening to Bible teaching here on the radio is a huge blessing that many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world simply don't have. We rejoice in this opportunity to share Pastor Sandy's messages with you. We do want to be sure to remind you that radio is not a church. Radio should be a complement to what God is already doing in your personal discipleship through the local body of believers that you're a part of. Maybe you're listening today and you don't have a home church. You've visited various places, but nothing seems to fit. First, if you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we want to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. For more information, including driving directions, please log on to sandyadams.org and follow the link to the church website. Now, if you're listening outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area and are looking for a home church, we encourage you to log on to calvarychapel.com and find a Calvary Chapel in your area that teaches through the Bible, just like Pastor Sandy does each day here on this program. Well, we wish we had more time today, but we've come to the close of today's broadcast. Be sure to remember to join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through God's Word. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.